is Art Dirt, Radio, coming to you from New York City. Art Dirt, Radio. One. Yes, and this is GH. I'm in New York, and this is actually a Skype cast. The first Art Dirt Radio Skype cast. And I'm actually speaking with Christina McPhee, a digital artist, and she's out on the West Coast. And in hi, Christina.
Hi. Hi, GH.
And how you doing out there? Okay?
It's wonderful. Yeah. I had to drag myself in from surfing, you know?
Yeah. It sounds like...
Not really.
Anyway.
I wish.
Yeah. So Christina is like... actually, what you would call, I guess you'd call it a new media artist. I don't know what you, is there a designation for that now? Do we dare speak the name?
I don't know. I mean, that whole term of new media is kind of a contested topic, yeah. But it's somewhat simpler to just refer to media.
Yeah.
But I would say transmedia, meaning perhaps
transmedia
I'm in a trance when I do my work.
Trance.
My entire life I've been involved in considering landscape and in sort of investigating what is landscape.
Yeah.
And so it's a larger project than it currently has certain iterations in what I guess is called new media, which one hastens to say is, as I say, this the definition of that is really kind of complicated and obscure. But I guess when I think of it, I would say that it's art using a technology that's has a perhaps possibly a generative element that is derived from software coding that's applied within the art making process, so that it's but even that would not be a particularly tight argument, because you could make the same argument for the video work that I do. Because I work with digital video. So, I don't know. It's not a very important issue to me.
It's not an issue, no.
Right.
There's sort of, let me describe. I'll do a little description. This is for the listening audience. That one of the pieces, I believe, that, I mean, I've seen like some Cibachrome or...
chromogenic prints, digital
chromogenic prints that are kind of, they look kind of montage-y a little bit, and I believe they're stills from videos, and they're kind of like three-panel type triptych things,
right,
which are very beautiful.
Really,
and they're
large.
Kind of, they're very large. They're what size are they, like that?
Oh, they go up to, you know, 100 inches, 190 inches.
Right.
I did an installation in L.A. last year where I basically had about 23 their digital chromogenic prints that were then laminated to plexiglass, and
nice.
And then hung next to one another, so that it was like it had the effect of being this kind of wall-to-wall kind of frozen cinema. It had effect of some kind of strange movie that you'd stumbled into, and then all the frames stopped, so that you could look at all the frames one by one. They're larger than a lot of. I mean, the smaller ones are at 6 feet, so that's the bottom scale. That way, I'm trying to engage in architectural and sort of body scale rather than in a pictorial windows on the world kind of scale.
Yeah, so that's like basically that goes to different kind of issues. And
one of
them is the kind of the notion of painting in the body, like you use your body to make paintings with a gesture, and then the kind of overall surface immersive thing that Pollock was involved in, and that kind of all those kind of issues that are involved in that discourse. Now, I noticed that, and there's a whole other issue, and there's several questions that are involved in this, but one of them is now I'm looking at, I know, now let me see, you're also the moderator of the Empire List.
sure. That's something that I do as a. It's a part of sort of the networked community. It's a worldwide list that deals with digital media arts and culture, to put it to kind of in a general way. And it's based in Sydney at the University of New South Wales and archived at Cornell in the National Library of Australia. And
people were to read, they could read like the archives. They just do a search for Empires. Yeah, do you have a URL handy or something?
Right, it's in lowercase.
Oh, wait a minute, I got it.
E-M-P-Y-R-E. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I have it here. It's like http://www.subtle, S-U-B-T-L-E.net, /empire, E-M-P-Y-R-E.
Right.
That'll take you to the archives anyway.
That's been a really interesting kind of a form of, you know, kind of a, it's a really interesting kind of way of having an interactive publishing venue, you might say. So it's an environment where I like to test out ideas, use it as a writing space, and it's a fairly formal list because you have there are special guests invited each month who present their ideas and work based on certain kinds of themes that I and the other moderators think are of interest. So it definitely builds a community. In fact, because of Empire, a lot of doors have opened for me, including I was invited to Sweden in December to a humanities lab that has a strong digital focus to participate in a seminar on data mining. So that was a application of my, because the people there were very interested in what I was doing as an artist with the interfaces of scientific visualization and that sort of a human emotive psychological landscape.
Right, because there's which brings me to a couple of two different things, but there's one project now you're working on, La Conchita.
Right.
Which
that's my new
which
work.
Actually referencing back to what you were saying about the spread of the panels in a frozen movie and that sort of thing.
Right.
This particular, and I'm going to say the website now for all you webby listener people. Actually, I'm also going to put it up on this, so it doesn't matter, podcast in type, so you'll see it. But
great.
It's http://christinamcphee.net/la_conchita.html. And you'll see that in the, anyway.
Right.
But that's, I was just checking that out. And essentially you've got these two different things occurring. You've got like this kind of web page layout thing, which is very kind of graphic and looks like one of those still images
from
your photograph. Then there's sections that are actually moving. They're kind of something like GIF animations or something happening.
Right. And they lead to, you know, there are pages of, it's, La Conchita is really it's conceived of as a project that's much larger than its online presence. So right now I have about 10% or 15% of the project is online. It's only a matter of time and effort for me to put it up. But when that's being said, when I work with net-based environments, I end up using the net as another type of artistic space. So it's, I don't, in other words, I don't, I experience the net as another, which is another composition area, and am interested in its potential for the project. So so basically what you're seeing right now is an attempt to try to take an online viewer into some of the worlds that I've explored at this site, which is called La Conchita. It's a town of maybe 400 people on the coast below Santa Barbara, above LA, and it's a little hippie beach community, and it continues to be, it has been, was very badly damaged by a huge mudslide about a year ago, and it's never been, this mudslide still exists, just like this huge turd in the middle of the town, and it's buried, it killed 10 people, and a huge number of houses are destroyed, and people are developing this whole vernacular shrine. It's this architectural response to the lack of activity from to resolve the problem. They're doing they're making these spontaneous performative structures, building this teepee on top of the thing and platforms. And it's all supposed to, no one is supposed to be able to go into this area. And they, of course, they all do. They're building gardens on it. And the important thing is to note that I'm interested in it is that, in fact, this is an environmental disaster zone, and there's going to be another, there will be another mudslide, possibly even much worse, that the U.S. Geologic Survey predicts it, that the whole slope above La Conchita is going to mobilize. It did part of it in 1995 and then in 2005. And with global warming, there's going to be, there's more rain and more storm, more winter flux of extremes. And when there's a lot of rain, it really undermines the whole system for the humans. It's not, obviously, it's an entirely natural process. So I think that's a really interesting environment, and that's the kind of it. La Conchita is typical of my interest in looking at these contested terrains where human response to the traumatic contact with the environment is really graphic. And I think in California we have this as an issue, as a constant issue. Probably is true of many places in the world, but. Obviously, but California is notorious for this because of our earthquakes and earthquake terrain, which is the other topic I've been working on for a couple years now, called Carrizo Parkfield Diaries, and I have a new project called Seismicity Variations, where I'm working with scientific visualizations of earthquake data and earthquake prediction, and relating that to what I call seismic memory or human traumatic memory. So those are my two big projects. La Conchita is a more documentary project in some ways because, in the seismic landscape of California, the seismicity is invisible unless there's a big earthquake. Otherwise, it's a constant presence, but there's no visual affect. There's no, there are very subtle geologic signs, and topographies of landscape that show the fault lines and so forth, but La Conchita is just like almost like a stage set of disaster. It just sits there and is with the slide in the middle of the town. So it's almost like just going there with a camera. You have almost an overwhelming moment of opportunity to just record. So this is presenting a more kind of objective documentary project mode of working for me than my origins in painting, as you point out, performative painting and abstraction.
But this is not going to be like a, you're not going to make a documentary movie.
Am I going to make a documentary? Like a film?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think that it would be strange to do that. It's possible. That'd be the sort of thing I would require some funding for. And if I did that, I would want to have the sort of formal involvement of the community organization there at La Conchita. So yeah. I'm investigating that. But I think that right now what my strength, and this kind of is an interesting role of the artist kind of moment. I think that the people at La Conchita are they feel that they've been totally had by all of the political leaders, by the scientific community. There's a lot of feeling that they've been abandoned. And they kind of have gotten used to me going around and doing video and photography and talking with people. I've been challenged many times, but when I explain that I'm doing this project, that's a non-journalistic project, they open up and they ask me why I'm doing it, and I tell them because I find the site extraordinarily beautiful, which I think it is in that sense of beautiful, terrible, or beautiful, sublime, and I particularly find the gesture, that the people's response to this disaster to be very poignant and worth recording, particularly, you know, as is probably inevitable, the place is going to change dramatically again. And so this is, in that sense, it is a documentary because I'm trying to record it. But I'm kind of recording it from the position of someone who's outside the mainstream media. And that's one reason why people actually were willing to talk to me. Otherwise, they would, ignore me or try to get rid of me, get me out of their village.
Yeah, you're just trying to get to some sort of other assembled narrative that actually states reality.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure there is such. Actually, I would disagree with the term assembled narrative. Because I think the whole idea of there being, I think more of the places being a series of really kind of disjunctive or fragments of narrative, like these kind of like going there is like finding all these beautiful pieces of, you know, wreckage. It's like it's a site of ruin. So there are many, many stories there, but they don't connect up very well. That's part of the tragedy of the site. If you were to make a more standard documentary for an outcome that was in the film world or something, it would be important to develop a more of a storyline. But what I'm doing is a more of a an attempt to just really study the site in with as many visual and audio techniques as I possibly can, and only can do this in this sort of interstitial zone of trust. I think that's almost the most interesting thing about the problematic of working there, is that every time I go there, I'm treated with more trust and more acceptance. And then people allow me to go into ruins and they talk to me about what happened. They talk to me about their fears for the future, how they can't sell their houses, how they don't know what to do with their children, whether the children should stay there or not. They take me into places that are very dangerous to go. This is not something I expected when I started working there. I didn't expect to be sort of embraced in that way. And so it puts me into, I think you've mentioned the word performance several times. This gives me kind of a performative active role in the community in a kind of really weird sort of sidereal way, which I didn't expect. It's very interesting sequela to my initial approach to the project.
Yeah, there's here's a quote from your posting over here on La Conchita on the Empire. It says, just as the way Hiroshima is a character in Hiroshima Mon Amour, anterior to everything and all memory, then to punch it all back into digital video, negating mechanics, or rather overwriting via layering loops of nonlinear digital editing. It was partly for this reason that I went to the Experimental Television Center in New York State to work with linear analog Jones sequencer to edit streams of digital video on La Conchita. I desired a machinic edit. And then it says, see Christina feed. Anyway. But then it says, which is kind of interesting, then it goes a little further about Deleuze and this and that, and a bit more about that girl, G-R-R-L.
Yeah.
Girl.
Right.
A few apologies for indulging in some delusional.
Right. Like Gorilla Girl.
Girls, yeah.
Right, exactly.
Then it says Persephone goes to the underworld, but she returns.
Right.
She's always en train de something else, becoming recursively.
Yes.
Thereby performing survival in the face of literally crushing adversity and its anticipation. In and out of the ground, Corey generates a topology.
Yes.
Performing its own becoming and at a remove. Is shooting the evidence like the hanging of a thing onto another thing. Like a prayer flag with a heart onto a chain link fence at La Conchita, at once art and ritual itself.
Yeah.
The work desires more than representation wants presence in the repeat. Intuitively, the performance of documentation wants both the performance of documentation. I like that. The performance of documentation wants both to observe Lakshita and to sublimate its terroir.
Yeah, I say terror, but also terroir. Like, in other words, both terror and earth.
And earth.
Or
I see terror and
terrain.
Earth.
Yeah.
In terrain, in images that move from erasure of the community to its recuperation and return.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I was looking at, like, Persephone is really kind of, it's a nice.
Persephone has been an important part of my, sort of an avatar of my practice ever since I got into new media, which I did very sort of voraciously about 5 years ago, when my whole life changed. I had to get out of a very bad marriage and move. It was literally kind of like getting in the car and leaving everything. Yeah. So I was kind of like in the got nothing left to lose place. So I felt like I was both buried and sort of emerging from being dead. So Persephone. Persephone is also expressed in the archaic Greek and classical Greek sculpture as the chore figure. Chorus is the male and chore is the female, and they're the chores are also become. I think they're the origin of the caryatid sculptures that, like, on the Acropolis, the women, the goddesses on the Acropolis. These are all girl chore, and Persephone is the daughter of the earth. Goddess, yeah. Demeter Demeter, and Persephone was out cutting flowers one day in the springtime, really happy-go-lucky little kid, and suddenly the earth just opened up, like you can just imagine this beautiful suburban lawn somewhere, you know, with like the sprinkler going, and you know they've done all their seeding and all their grass is coming up, and then suddenly there's just this big hole in the ground, this black dirt, and you know. The emissaries from the king of Hades himself, grab her like an abductor, and she's just this kid, and she just can't do anything about it, and he installs her as the queen of the dead. And so Demeter is unbelievably distraught because her main joy in life is her daughter, the chore, Persephone. So she starts to cry and cannot recover from her grief. And that's the Greek mythologic explanation for winter. This is why we have winter, because Gaia is crying, or Demeter is crying for her lost one. And, you know, and then she makes some kind of a deal with Hades that she's asked if Persephone can come out every once in a while. And then, you know, kind of they could split. It was like a joint custody. So... So right. She comes back out, and that's the idea of the of Persephone.
Spring
is that she always is in a state of becoming. She's never in a state of in the binary. She's never at one point or the other, but she's always in a movement stage. And so that's another reason that I'm very interested in the functionality of that myth as a metaphor of how I like to work performatively with media. There's a site that I made after I made my, you know, escape and had this new life. I started to work. I didn't have any experience with digital media, or very minimal. I mean, I'd been working with Photoshop for a couple of years, but not very much. And I did this whole body of work called Knack Smash. And if you go to there's a site called knacksmash.net, and there's a piece that on that. Knack Smash.net is mostly net art based works.
Knack Smash,
NAXSMASH.net. Knack's meaning birth, nascence, nativity, but X is, you know, like the wipeout, or an X marks the spot, or it's also X as in, you know, women have two. X chromosome, so it's sort of like the place of X, could be described as a disappearance of a woman. and then smash. So nascent and smashing. So it's a birthplace, but it's also a smashing of forms, a smashing up of a place. So that's, it's like the idea of both things being born, but also dissipating immediately. That kind of flux, which again, kind of a Persephone metaphor. Mm-hmm. So nacksmash.net has one of its pieces is called Sonic Persephone that I collaborated with a flash designer, Michael Cole, here in California to do that piece. And that's a piece that's a 56K modem friendly piece, so it can be seen, you know, you don't have to have a fast connection. A lot of my work is unfortunately pretty much fast connection for stuff for the videos work that I have online. But anyway, so that's the origin of that the Persephone thematic for me. I'm very interested in this whole idea of slipstreaming too between different points. So that, for example, as I described my role at La Conchita, I'm neither a documentary filmmaker nor a journalist. I'm neither a political activist nor an archaeologist. I'm neither a scientist nor a, I don't know what, just a casual observer. I'm in this in-between condition, and I think you've said somewhere that you think that being an artist is political to begin with, and I would tend to agree that people will assign political value or cultural political value to the act of an artist, and I think that's what's happened in the case of La Conchita. So by being in this kind of slip mode that Persephone embodies, this becoming, always becoming girl mode, then people, it creates a space for people to be able to assign their own meanings and values to your work. And it becomes the work is a kind of an open field for interpretation by others in the spirit of Umberto Eco. So that's kind of what I find important about what, I mean, that's something that gives me a sense of meaning. I try to get at that when I say that little, you quoted me about talking about, can you just do, how, you know, that Corey or Persephone generates a topology. I mean, in a way I'm trying to generate a topology. Topo, place, logos, knowing, right? So a landscape becomes a topology when an artist engages with it and, in a sense, makes her consciousness and her body presence and her technologic skills kind of a place of flow through for the content of the site. And it's an interpretive function that I make, but I also, it's also generative, I think.
So essentially, we're going to have to wrap this up.
Yeah.
But because now we're at
15 minutes.
It's going to be too long. Well, no, it's more like 28 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
But but what I'm going to do is leave this as the last discussion point, which will be for another interview, which we'll do more. We'll do a couple more of these.
I'd love to, yeah.
We haven't got it, but I mean, what I get positionally is that there's a, just to tie you into like Robert Smithson, with the discussion of the site, non-site.
Yes, indeed.
There's a whole kind of a level of the notion of performance and this site, non-site, which I believe is that you're, not that you're doing it self-consciously, that it's actually, it's something very interesting and exciting that's happening. Anyway, so.
Definitely,
Christina,
let's talk about that next time. I think that's a really core topic for me. That's great.
We can get into this, and thanks a lot, and I'll be talking to you.
All right, thanks, G.H. Okay.